We're taking a look at the week in Washington. The big story, of course, is the impeachment inquiry, with the House Intelligence Committee holding its first public hearing as part of the process today. Acting U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine William Taylor and Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent spent the day answering questions from both Democrats and Republicans. President Trump, meanwhile, wrote the hearing off as just another part of what he's called the impeachment sham. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you watched the hearing, what did you make of what was said? Do you think the witnesses indicated a misuse of power by the president? Do you support the White House's pressure for some officials not to testify when called by Congress? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Here to break it down with us is Tolu Olorunipa. He's a White House reporter for The Washington Post. Tolu, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You know, both George Kent and William Taylor opened their statements focused on the importance of U.S. military aid to Ukraine, the threat that that country faces to Russia. Why was that important for them to communicate?
Well, they want to make sure, and I think the Democrats on the committee also want the public to know that this is not just about a minor policy dispute. This is something that has real implications not only for the lives of Ukrainian officials and Ukrainian service members, but also for American national interests and national security, in part because Russia has been trying to take advantage of Ukraine over the past several years. So they wanted to sort of broaden the lens on these hearings and let the public know that this is not just about a minor political dispute between Democrats and Republicans, but this is something that has a real-world impact on not only our allies in Ukraine, but also on the U.S. national security. They were pushing that message as part of the broader discussions that we heard today about President Trump's push to get the Ukrainians to investigate his political rivals. The fact that Ukraine was sort of under the threat of Russian aggression and losing thousands of lives in this hot war that they've had for the past few years with Russia puts into context the fact that the president had withheld some of the aid that the Ukrainians had been using in that war, in part because he wanted to pursue these investigations. So it did put it in a broader context, and it allowed the public to have a better sense of why this is seen as such a monumental situation that has led to a potential impeachment, not only because there is this political dispute, but also because this is the heart of U.S. foreign policy when it comes to Ukraine.
Bill Taylor agreed to come out of retirement to serve as U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. And we now understand that once he got on the job, he said he was confused and alarmed at some of the things that were happening well before that July phone call between Presidents Trump and Zelensky. What do we know had him worried?
Well, he put it pretty clearly that there were two tracks of U.S. foreign policy taking place in Ukraine. There was the official track, which involved the State Department, involved high-level diplomats, involved U.S. foreign policy as it's traditionally been conducted. But there was also an irregular channel, another track in which President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, was meeting with the Ukrainian officials, pushing for various investigations that Giuliani and some of Trump's allies thought would be helpful to President Trump's reelection bid, which includes investigations of a Ukrainian gas company that had put Hunter Biden, the son of former Vice President Joe Biden, on its board. The fact that this unorthodox and very irregular channel was taking over much of the foreign policymaking of the United States really confused a lot of people within the State Department, including the ambassador, and it led to a lot of strange instances over the past several months, and a lot of the questions that they had were not being answered, and it seemed that Rudy Giuliani was running a lot of the U.S. foreign policy and not the State Department diplomats who had been, you know, sworn in, who had pledged an oath to the Constitution, in many cases had been confirmed by the Senate. Instead, it was Rudy Giuliani who as far as we know, doesn't have a security clearance and was acting on the behalf of his client, President Trump, and not necessarily on behalf of the U.S. government, who was calling the shots in Ukraine. And that was part of the reason he was confused, not knowing who was really in charge and whether or not U.S. foreign policy was continuing to be what it always has been, or whether or not it was shifting to a much more politicized and political nature based on Rudy Giuliani's interests.
And we do have Ambassador Taylor referring to that today. Let's hear from him.
I was concerned when the irregular channel appeared to be going against the overall, the irregular channel was going against the overall direction of and purpose of the regular channel.
Do we know how this irregular channel was established, or where it came from? Has testimony revealed that yet?
Well, there has been hundreds of pages of testimony from behind closed doors that was already released by the committees that had been investigating this before these open hearings began. And we did get a picture of that from that testimony from several different diplomats who said that back after Ukraine had their elections and elected a new president, there were several U.S. officials who went to that inauguration, then they came back and they tried to get a meeting with President Trump. And during that meeting, President Trump said that all of those officials should talk to Giuliani. The president was not willing to engage with any of the foreign policy related to Ukraine. He wanted to run everything through Giuliani. We've heard from several people in that meeting that the president thought that Ukraine had tried to take him down during the 2016 election, and that the place was the country was entirely corrupt. And for that reason, he had essentially designated Rudy Giuliani to be his point person for Ukraine policy. And in doing that, he essentially blessed this back channel, this irregular channel that Rudy Giuliani was pursuing. And this irregular channel tended to be much more in line with President Trump's political interests and less so with the national interests of the U.S.
Tolu Olorunipa is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. We're talking about public testimony and the background, the events that led up to this in the impeachment inquiry on Capitol Hill. And your calls are welcome. What do you want to know? 800-642-1234. Are there specific people you want to testify in a public arena? Is that important to you, or do you think transcripts are enough? You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tolu, what was the Republican line of questioning in witnesses that we saw for hours on Capitol Hill today?
Well, we definitely heard Republicans say that they did not believe this was an impeachable offense. They asked about whether or not the aide that was the center of this this impeachment inquiry, the aide that had been held up by the president, whether it eventually did make it to the Ukrainians, and the answer to that was yes. They asked whether or not the Ukrainians did announce any investigations that President Trump and Rudy Giuliani were seeking, and the answer to that was no. So they tried to say that because there was no essential quid pro quo that was consummated with an announcement of an investigation of President Trump's political rivals, that essentially there's nothing to see here. Democrats obviously pushed back on that, saying that the aide was only released after a whistleblower came forward and said that he was concerned and that several members of Trump's own administration were concerned about what was taking place, and that once they were caught, once there was this whistleblower report, that's when they decided to let the aide go. So that was part of the questioning that went back and forth. Republicans also said they did not believe that President Trump was trying to target only his political rival, but he was trying to target corruption in Ukraine. And it just happened that it just so happened that the case that he had mentioned, the case that he was interested in, involved former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter.
Did we see Democrats push back at all, challenge this testimony, or get them to try to expand, or were they largely supportive?
Yeah, Democrats did use these witnesses to advance the narrative that they have pushed forward, which is that they believe that President Trump abuses power by trying to co-opt U.S. foreign policy for his own political interests. And they essentially allowed these witnesses to say what their experience had been with that. And they did not feel the need to really pressure the witnesses. They allowed the witnesses to give lengthy opening statements, and those opening statements essentially confirmed much of what the Democrats wanted these witnesses to say publicly, which is the same thing that they've said behind closed doors, which is that they were also concerned about this irregular foreign policy channel in which it did appear that Rudy Giuliani was trying to pursue the political interests of President Trump while also pushing for Ukraine to open investigations as part of U.S. foreign policy. And both George Kent and Bill Taylor were concerned about how this was playing out, and they did think it was inappropriate. There were some Democrats who tried to get the two diplomats to say that it was impeachable or say that it was illegal, and the two witnesses did steer clear. They said they were just there as fact witnesses, and they were just going to provide the information about what they knew. They weren't going to make judgment calls about whether or not any of this was impeachable or essentially illegal. So in that case, some Democrats did try to push the witnesses a little bit further than they were willing to go. But for the most part, they just the Democrats just asked questions and allowed the witnesses to lay out a pretty damaging sense of evidence that President Trump had been involved in wrongdoing.
We're talking with Tolu Olorunipa, White House reporter for The Washington Post. We're catching up on the latest in the ever-evolving impeachment inquiry. And I want to welcome Nancy from Eagle River to the conversation. Nancy, what are your thoughts?
Yes. First of all, I think that anybody that's been subpoenaed that works in the White House should have to come and testify. I also think that it's time possibly for us to bring in an investigator or a prosecutor like we did with Clinton and was done with Nixon, separate people to come in and talk to everyone and get the information that the world needs to know.
All right. Thanks, Nancy. Tolu, have you heard any traction on something like that, any murmurings, or is Congress really going to take this on their own?
Yes, Congress has mostly taken on the role of investigator, in part because the Justice Department decided not to pursue this, not to investigate, not to have a special counsel or a special prosecutor look into any of this. So that's part of the reason why there have been these behind closed doors sessions over the past several weeks. It's rankled several Republicans who have called for these open sessions that we're now having. But in part because this was the investigative part of this process, Democrats had to play the role of prosecutor and convene what was essentially a grand jury by having several officials from the Trump administration testify under subpoena and behind closed doors as they gathered information and facts. And now we're in the public part of the process, which is more akin to a trial. I don't expect the Justice Department or any special prosecutor in the Trump administration to take up this case. It's likely to be taken in the political sphere through Congress with this impeachment process. And if the impeachment is able to pass through the House, then there will be an official trial in the Senate, which could happen early next year. But that is one key difference between this impeachment process and the one we had after Clinton and during the Nixon administration, where in both of those cases we did have sort of prosecutors who were playing a much more integral role in the process. In this process, it's Congress that's really playing that role, and the Justice Department has decided not to engage in this process.
Let's go ahead and welcome Jim in Milwaukee then to the conversation. Jim, what are your thoughts?
Well, hi, Tolu, and thanks for taking my call. My thoughts are that there's not really a witness. This is just hearsay. These are people that are citing from other people that have heard from other people. And the second thing is I don't think it's a crime or it's impeachable at all if the president wants to look into corruption by a U.S. official, you know, Vice President Biden and his son for corruption in another country. I don't think that's egregious at all.
All right, Jim, thanks so much for that call. And Jim is worried that they're not witnesses, that it's a game of telephone. But to Lou, it sounds like the witnesses in front of Congress are people who have seen and heard things firsthand.
Yes, in some cases, these are witnesses that have heard directly from people who are essentially directly involved in this. There are some witnesses that do have secondhand information. They are reporting conversations that they heard about from other people who were directly involved. The witnesses that do have the most direct firsthand information, including President Trump and some of his top aides, have not participated in this process. The White House has not handed over documents. They have not allowed people like John Bolton and Mick Mulvaney, the White House chief of staff, to testify. So it's a little bit difficult for Republicans to make the case that this is all hearsay. At the same time, they are not calling for people with direct evidence, including John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, and Mick Mulvaney, to testify. And some of the people who have testified do have direct knowledge of these events. And the fact that there is general consistency between the conversations that are being reported across several witnesses does give them more credibility. It's not like you're hearing one thing from one witness and then a completely different account from another witness. So even in the cases where the evidence is not necessarily firsthand, the fact that it's corroborated by other people who have more direct knowledge does give it more credibility. But I do think that it would be much more revealing to hear from the people who have direct knowledge about the president's mindset. And we may hear from some of them next week, including Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who spoke to the president multiple times and had to revise his testimony a couple of weeks ago after he refreshed his memory and said that, yes, there actually was a quid pro quo that he relayed to the Ukrainians, saying that in order to get a meeting with President Trump and U.S. military assistance, they would need to announce several investigations into President Trump's political rivals. And you are hearing more and more from Republicans that they think that that was okay, that they do not think that that was impeachable, and they are no longer saying that this didn't happen. It's more that it happened, but it was legitimate, and it was all about looking into corruption, not looking into interference into the 2020 election. Instead, it was a legitimate interest in corruption in Ukraine that just happened to involve Joe Biden.
Tolu Olorunipa is a White House reporter for The Washington Post, and we're talking about the impeachment inquiry here. Want to bring on now Wes from Kickapoo River Valley. Wes, what's your take on what's happening right now?
Hello. Thanks for doing this. I watched the entire hearing. Obviously, the Republicans are trying to come up with a defense. They were kind of basically acting like a defense attorney in a trial. I found one of the things they tried to be really fascinating, which is they argued that there was a quid pro quo, but it wasn't to do with Joe Biden. It wasn't to do with Hunter Biden. Instead, they said that they were withholding the meeting and they were withholding the aid in order to get help with the Russia investigation, to say that it was Ukraine and not Russia. But wouldn't that also be an example of him using his power of office to benefit himself or not?
Yeah, thank you for the call, Wes. Tolu, dealing with the concept of a quid pro quo and when it is for the nation's interest and when it is for political interest, that's a line we're trying to figure out right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's important to point out that there's no evidence from the U.S. intelligence community that Ukraine was responsible for hacking during the 2016 election. They have attributed that to Russia very directly and very publicly. So it does appear that President Trump and Rudy Giuliani were trying to get Ukraine to investigate what, by all intents and purposes from the U.S. intelligence community, is a conspiracy theory. And that conspiracy theory could potentially benefit President Trump personally, because he feels that he was wrongly accused of colluding with Russia. And if there was some way to make it less clear that Russia interfered in the 2016 election, that could benefit President Trump directly by making him making the entire Russia collusion argument less credible. So there is a sense that even that form of a quid pro quo would be problematic, because it's not in the U.S. national interest to have Ukraine investigating something that is a conspiracy theory for the president's benefit. So that's something that Democrats are pushing as well. But the 2020 argument and the idea that the quid pro quo was directly related to Hunter Biden and Joe Biden is a much clearer argument for the Democrats. And that's why I think they focus more on that part and less on the idea of whether or not there was an investigation related to 2016 and Ukrainian interference in the election.
Tolu, we just have a moment left, but I want to get a picture of the White House's response after day one of this public testimony. What are you seeing?
Oh, well, the White House is saying that this is all secondhand, thirdhand information, that none of these witnesses actually spoke to the president and did not know his mindset. They are pushing back against these career diplomats, saying that this was just a policy dispute. This was just unelected bureaucrats trying to voice their discomfort with President Trump's style of foreign policy, and that none of what they said was actually impeachable. So that's the response from the White House thus far, and I think we'll expect to hear more of that as we hear from more witnesses in the weeks ahead.
Absolutely. Tolu, thank you for joining us today.
Sure thing. Thank you.
Tolu Olorunipa is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. He talked with us about the first public hearings on the impeachment inquiry into President Trump.